Hey everyone, welcome to the Film 5D Podcast, episode 12 of the Film 5D Podcast. Today we got a lot to talk about, so we're going to get right into it. How was your week? Did you see any movies?
Aaron, you cut me off.
I'm sorry, that's all I care about. Did you see any movies? Quick, come on.
No.
Okay. Well, I saw a few movies. Some of which, actually none of which we're talking about in this first segment. Basically, we're going to talk about what came out this week. In the second segment, we're going to talk about news and rumors. A lot came out. The A7R2 came out this week. We're recording this on a Friday. It came out earlier this week.
Is that a Sony camera?
It's a Sony camera.
Don't care. Not for the show.
You should care. Everybody's saying that this is like replacing every DSLR. Everybody's saying this is possibly the best DSLR ever released. So more on that. We're going to talk about, you know, how it compares to the 5DS. The 5DS already has a price drop, which we'll get into. Remember, it was $3,600. Now it's like $3,000. They dropped it by $600 within the month of it being out because they have to compete with the Sony cameras. So that's pretty funny. We're going to talk about the RX100 Mark IV. Our Canadian friends at the camera store reviewed it, and it was a pretty good review about like kind of the video features and how it compares to my RX100 Mark III, which we forgot all of our props today. Grab that prop.
Oh, look at this. Well, bam, I am right now grabbing this little
thing. That is what we call production value in the biz. And for segment three, we actually got a question from YouTube, so we're going to go ahead and discuss that. It's a pretty interesting thing, so it's something I've been wanting to talk about, and this kind of inspired me to talk about that. Huh. And yeah, maybe going forward, if we get any more questions on Twitter or Facebook or YouTube, we'll answer them in segment three, because we're not doing tutorials anymore like we said last time. And then segment four, your segment, you're going to talk about the Lexus hoverboard and other various kind of modes of transportation, like kind of mini segways and stuff like that. So yes. I don't know how that has anything to do with film, though. I have seen applications by Tom Antos on his channel where he just showed using that as like a kind of a dolly in a way.
Spoiler
alert. Oh, I didn't know you were going to talk about that. I didn't know you were going to talk about that, but I just kind of put two and two together. Mm-hmm. And then for number five, we're going to have our weekly fight. And this time I got to choose what I'm fighting for, and you didn't. We are going to fight film versus digital.
Easy.
Something we've been wanting to talk about and discuss for quite some time. All right, let's get right into it. So what came out this week? We're going to talk about what good came out last week in a bit. But what came out this week? What's the movie on the top of your Rotten Tomatoes you're seeing right now? We could see on the screen.
Fantastic Four.
At 9%.
I see 10.
I'm showing 9.
Refresh your browser.
I'm showing 9%.
What? Let me...
Does it really matter? difference?
It went down. Oh. It went down. My browser went down. It's 9%.
Usually they go up a little bit. Yeah. This one's going down still. So there's a pretty interesting story behind the Fantastic Four being released again, kind of rebooted, and how from the beginning I honestly thought it was not going to do good. I'm really happy that it hasn't done good, not because I don't like the actors, because I actually like all four of the actors in the movie, but because I don't like that Sony's kind of cash grabbing just to hold on to the rights and basically destroying a franchise when they could just hand it off to Marvel, who, as we know, as of the last 10 years, does not release a bad movie. And Sony coming out with Amazing Spider-Man, Spider-Man 2, that ruined the franchise. Now they have to reboot it again. And this Fantastic Four, and then so the Silver Surfer one that came out, like, I guess 5 to 8 years ago. I don't remember. Man, they're just killing it. And
I know. And all those cruddy cameras they're releasing, too. Like, Sony, man.
So on screen right now, I took a screenshot of this because I wasn't sure if it would be up by today. I took a picture of this last night.
Yeah.
It's a tweet from Josh Trank, who is the director, and I'll read the tweet. A year ago, I had a fantastic version of this, and it would have received great reviews. You'll probably never see it. That's the reality, though. The director of this movie that's being released today, yesterday on his Twitter, which he quickly deleted, said that this movie sucks. And that he's basically saying it's not his fault, which, honestly, I can see. Like, a director doesn't try to make a bad movie. Actors don't try to make bad movies, though. You have people like Nicolas Cage who just don't give a crap who make bad movies, but
hey.
For the most part, the people involved are all artists and they will try their best to make something good. And it's the production studios that are either rushing development or they want it shot a certain way or they want to change the script or they want to be super hands-on. This probably got rushed is what I'm guessing, because like I said, they have to release a new Fantastic Four every certain amount of years to hold on to their rights. Which I think is just ridiculous. This thing is a cash grab. It's going to flop, which is good, because that means they're going to lose money on it. and then maybe they won't do it anymore. I mean, this is just the best possible case scenario, I think, in my opinion. I feel bad for the actors because I like Kate Mara. I like, what's his name? Michael B. Jordan. So
he ain't just my he ain't Michael Jordan. He's Michael B.
But though he did play in the All-Star Celebrity Game, I believe, last February, and they kept calling him Michael Jordan. And he did not play like Michael Jordan, not even close. Okay, what else came out what came out last week? I'm actually gonna go see this tomorrow, hopefully.
Mission Impossible.
And we've talked about this at length, but it got a 93%. It won the weekend easily. It's probably going to win this weekend again, which is a good sign for Tom Cruise. He's making that comeback. Everybody's starting to believe in him again, including you. I know you weren't so happy with him, but I've always been a fan of his.
Yeah.
And I just like how they always use like a different director for all these movies. They've already announced the sixth one, which might actually be the final one because it's MI6. It's going to be Mission Impossible 6, like MI6, you know. it's a play on words because there's an agency called MI6. Oh my god. But yeah, I always liked it. They have different directors, like J.J. Abrams directed one, the guy who directed Tomorrowland that just came out recently directed one. I forget his name. He's also director of Incredibles, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. But they always have different directors, so it always has a kind of different feel. And it just looked really good from the trailers, and I'm glad it's getting good reviews.
I'm actually kind of, like, intrigued by this series. Like, I didn't really realize they're pumping out this many Mission Impossibles. Like,
well, it kind of hit a lull between 3 and 4 because of everything Tom Cruise was going through. But then they came out with 4, and everybody was happy. They added Simon Pegg. They added Jeremy Renner. Like, they added good actors. And now that whole cast came back, and obviously Vin Rames is in all of them, like he's like the usual. But one thing I want to show you here is look at Tom Cruise's last three movies that have been rated, all around 90%. Like he's coming out, he's actually doing movies that are good. And Oblivion, I actually really liked. This should be on my list of underrated movies because 54 was it actually? I don't even know. But remember we had that discussion. 54% is pretty crazy, but. You know, I think he's, and Jack Reacher was obviously another underrated one that we talked about.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he's coming out with some solid movies, and this is a good sign for him and moving forward. Though they did potentially spoiler announce that there's going to be Edge of Tomorrow 2 with him and Emily Blunt, which, man, I love that movie, and I almost feel like it's going to ruin, it was my favorite movie from last year, and I feel like it's going to ruin it for me. If they release that.
Dude, it was all a dream.
It was all a dream. I don't know how they make a sequel to that. I guess they kind of maybe do a prequel almost, but they won't because he wouldn't be in it. So it's a little disconcerting.
Right, it like goes all the way. It starts at the end of the movie. Anyway, I can't really say anything because I'm going to spoil everything.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, forgot. Quote of the week as we move on to segment 2. There are no coincidences, only the illusion of coincidence.
Dude, I totally know this, but I don't know it at the same time.
We were just talking about this movie.
Edge of Tomorrow?
Look at your head.
Oh, V for Vendetta.
V for Vendetta. Not even my favorite quote from that movie, but I thought it was fitting because the Fantastic Four is totally flopping right now. It's very rare that people start talking about a flop the day it comes out. Like usually it's like halfway through Saturday they're like, oh, it's not doing very well, whatever. Yeah. But they're already talking about it like not making money, which is pretty crazy. And I just thought that was kind of fitting for that. There are no coincidences. There's a reason that it's not doing well. It's because the production company. All right, so next segment. A7R2 came out. Great reviews. Right now, I'm actually on my screen. I have a comparison shot of the 5DSR and the A7R2 at the same kind of settings, high ISO settings. And just look.
Wow. Granted, yeah, that 5DS is looking way better.
It's literally not comparable at all. And yeah, this has about, you know, 8 more megapixels. So it's not gonna do as well with ISO, but man, that's not even, that's inexcusable. Like, how far behind is this sensor that this looks that much cleaner? And this is like pushing it all the way, you know, pushing, bringing the shadows all the way up and seeing how much noise you can get and kind of thing. Kind of an extreme test, but man, that right there is pretty bad. And so the main thing that I've kind of been sifting through and curating kind of like some of the reviews, because I kind of want, I really want to try it myself, and I really want to get one, but well, that remains to be seen whether I will. The main thing people are saying that they're impressed with is the dynamic range. For a camera with 42 megapixels to be like so good range from blacks to whites is pretty unusual. And they're saying it's comparable even to the A7S. It also has S-Log2 for video and all those things. One of the things that, so I'm going to go over to this rolling shutter test, and it kind of gives you an idea, you know, Panasonic GH4 is pretty good scoring on this because it's got the way smaller sensor, you know, 1/4 the size, so it's not going to have this crazy jello effect. You see the A7S right here, they basically say that the A7S full frame is about the same as the A7R II full frame, and then if you crop down even more, it gets even better. On here it shows 16 versus 24, difference in pixels, but they're saying it's basically the same. What you want to avoid is this Super 35 format, which is kind of what I wanted to use it for. I kind of wanted to have the option to do a Super 35, that way you can basically get the exact same bokeh you would get using a film camera. It's basically like you're shooting on film, whereas full frame's a little bit bigger. Mm-hmm. But they're saying it's basically unusable for handheld. It's just so bad. And they compare it to like the 1DC, it's kind of the same as A7S and stuff. So that was interesting. It's a little unfortunate because, you know, that's the one thing I'm really excited for. You would think there would be less rolling shutter because it's using less of the sensor, but I guess it's the way it scans it. It causes even more. I don't know. The 5DS had a price drop. We talked about it. It dropped $600, like, which is about 20% within a month of releasing. That's how scared they were. And I get, they say that it's because of the difference, like the $3,600 5DS versus the 5DSR, where it's $3,800, difference in $200. People were just buying the R, and so they had way too many of the S's, so they lowered the price. That's what they say. Honestly, we know it's because the A7R II was coming out, and they have to compete. And they knew about tests like this one, where, well, how are they going to sell a camera for $600 or $400 more that's coming out with these results? And we haven't even seen those official results yet when it comes to the dynamic range and all those different things like we talked about. So
I think you're being unfair and you're demonizing Canon for the grace that they have given us. Thank you, Canon.
We already talked about how the 5DS lost to the A7 R1, which was released in like December of 2013, like over a year and a half ago. And now the A7 R2, which everybody's saying is possibly the greatest small body camera ever made, is killing it now, obviously. And it's going to be even worse when some of these official tests come out.
Yeah, but like, which camera is actually better?
The A7 R2. The video features, the fact that internal 4K, there's a list of things, but the fact that the image quality is better and the resolution is not as high, but it doesn't really matter if your image quality sucks. You don't really want you don't want more pixels because you're just going to look crappier. So, yeah.
You're stuck with Sony.
and then right here, this is a pretty interesting rumor. I don't know. I'd say it's definitely a rumor at this point. This is a picture of the Canon CX10. They're basically saying that the Sony A7S II is probably going to look something like this, where they're going to have a...
Canon is a trend center. Nice.
Guys, don't listen to Colton. He's just trolling right now. But the interesting thing about this is the only reason I can see them doing this is because the A7R II is so good. How are they going to top that? Like, how are they going to top the A7R II at this point? They're going to release the A7S, which was already good at low light. They're going to give it internal 4K, which people already have showguns for. Like, they got to actually change the thing. And doing it like this would make it upgradable, like where you can add stuff onto it.
It'll actually look like a Canon.
Unlike this Canon, it'll probably be good at low light and have internal 4K. Oh, actually, this one has 4K. But, yeah. So, the RX100 Mark IV, like I said, the camera store guys did a review on it, And it seems that basically the body's exactly the same, because with the between the Mark 1, Mark 2, and Mark 3, the bodies all got different, and they added different features. And for instance, the Mark 3, they took away the hot shoe and they put a flash there, and then they put where the flash was, they put a viewfinder, which is the main reason I got it. So the body is completely the same. The sensor's exactly the same. The thing that's different, so like the image quality, all that stuff, dynamic range is all going to be basically the same. The thing that's different is the processor, how quickly it can shoot images. Like the burst shooting, it could shoot 20 pictures in like a few seconds, or even 1 second, I believe. This is very, very quick. Obviously, it's got those super slow, like 900 frames per second slow motion. It's got full HD. It's got internal 4K. It's got full HD, like 240 frames per second, which is basically like 12 times slow motion. Mm-hmm. So better than a GoPro, basically. And it is double the price. It's $1,000. So, but I'm definitely going to hold off. They didn't, other than that, those kind of features, which I wouldn't really use it for because I do have a GoPro, so I don't need another camera like that. I think it's really cool for anybody who's $1,000, you basically can get a DSLR at that point, but at least it comes with everything. It comes with a good 24 to 70 millimeter equivalent Zeiss lens, just like mine did. But just those features of being able to shoot super fast for sports and everything is super cool, especially if you're raising a family and you got kids or whatever.
Yeah, kids, those things.
Yeah. All right, moving on. We want to save some time for our last topic. We are going to talk about overuse of low f-stop, shallow depth of field. We actually got a picture. I'm going to pull it up from Nagel 5178. Gave us a question.
Yes.
A topic, actually, the overuse of shallow depth of field. And like, basically, he's talking about all these film. Since all the DSLRs are so prevalent, everybody can buy one. Everybody just goes to the lowest f-stop and just tries to focus. So I have some pros and cons of this, and I'm sure you have some opinions on this as well. To me, shallow depth of field is artistic. I do like seeing it. Do I like seeing it for a whole movie? No. We also know that it's a tool. It's a way to draw focus to a certain subject or an object. So if you overuse it too much and you shoot for the whole film, then you lose that ability to do that because it's not as powerful as, you know, a specific shot where a character is looking at a gun on the ground or whatever, and then you draw focus to it because it was out of focus at first. If you're doing it the whole time, it's kind of like it's less effective. So do you have any thoughts on this? And do you think it's good? Do you think it's bad? I have some other things I want to mention.
Well, I think what's happening is it's kind of like filters, you know, like when you have pictures in, like, I don't know, Instagram or something like that. Like, it's something to kind of differentiate it and make it a little bit more special. So, like, if you think in your head, like, of what a movie looks like or something like that, or something that looks like, you know, it's more professional and has value, like, what's a good way to easily do that? You can add a shallow depth of field. It makes it look a little more interesting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But then, obviously, like you were saying, when it's so overused, when it's so everywhere, like, it kind of just, it loses its quality. Like,
yeah, it's all about the purpose. We talked about motivated camera movement. Like, there's got to be a reason that the camera moves. The camera can't just pan around and look around and everything. The actor, either like the character on screen, either has to like reach for something or bend down to tie their shoe, like before the camera moves, or the camera does it right before them and then they do it. You can't just have it just going all over the place. It'd be disorienting. It has to go with the flow of the subjects. And I feel the same way about shallow depth of field. I like to see it. I don't mind when it's used heavily as long as there's a reason behind it. Some entire films can be shot that way because that's just the look of it. Maybe it's a very claustrophobic film. Maybe it's a short film shot in like a classroom or a very small like jail cell or something, and you want it to be claustrophobic, so you want that kind of shallow depth of field. The thing, like you said, is it does give you the film look. It does. The benefit is that, like, unlike movies on or videos on YouTube that you saw in 2005, where basically everything was in focus and everything was super contrasty and there was no kind of dynamic range or flat look, now you can get all of that with a DSLR. So why wouldn't you do that every time? Because you're basically tricking people into thinking that your work is a little bit on a higher level.
Yeah, and I think also it comes into play too, like a lot of productions or videos or whatever you're looking at on YouTube, they might not have the time to set up a whole set or, like, get everything perfect in the background or anything like that. So using a shallow depth of field is a nice thing to just be like, well, whatever.
Put like, that trash out of focus.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but it is that in that way, it is a little bit of a crutch as well. You just got to be careful. Mm-hmm. One thing I wanted to mention, I'll put a link right here to the episode that we did a while back about how to achieve the film look. And one of the things I mentioned was that they say basically you got to be careful, especially with these full frame cameras. For instance, for a full frame camera, you should never really on average shoot below f/5.6. You shoot f/1.4 all the time on a full frame, it's going to be so hairline where the eye is in focus and the nose is out of focus. And it's just too much and it's too distracting. And it's you want to hang around 5.6 to get the kind of natural film look. Now, there will be shots where you have a more telephoto lens or you just go down to a lower f-stop to draw the focus to something. But as you're filming, you kind of want to hang around, not go below 5.6 and f/4 on a crop frame, like an APS-C type, like Canon camera. That's kind of what we talked about in that episode, and that's kind of the rule I live by. Like, for instance, right now we're shooting on at 5.6. If we wanted to, we could shoot at f/16 because the ISO goes up so high on this camera. But I think 5.6 is right. 5.6 is also a good number because it's right where most lenses are sharp. It's like that's the tipping off point. Like 4, you start getting a little, kind of a halo-y around the edges, and then if you go too high, like f/11, then you start getting that kind of pinhole effect. Mm-hmm. And you get chromatic aberration, stuff like that. So my rule of thumb is 5.6 for my full frame cameras, f/4 if you're using an APS-C like a 70 Mark II or something like that. And then for I don't know what the conversion would be for I guess it is f/2.8 for a like a GH4 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Which is, this is what the question says, f/2.8. So that's my thoughts on it. So it's like I like to see it. I like to see it more than I don't like to see it. It is definitely overused, and I would say that you should always try to be motivated, but like you said, guerrilla film tactics, like you kind of sometimes you just have to do that to get around the fact that you're not in the perfect location or whatever, and there's cars going by or something. Mm-hmm. All right, next topic. Thanks for the question. What are you talking about?
Oh, I'm talking about the Lexus hoverboard. I don't know if it actually has an official name, but I know it as a Lexus hoverboard. And those little things, I don't know if anyone's seen it, but it's basically a Segway without the handle.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've heard about those, and I consider buying those. As you know, I have an electric skateboard. It was, to me, at the time, the most socially acceptable way of transporting myself to work, which is only 3 miles away. I use it so often, but I was really interested in those Segways, but this hoverboard thing sounds completely different. I have no idea what you're referring to, or
yeah, just a little backstory on the hoverboard. Lexus released a video of it. I don't know, maybe like a couple months ago, and they were hyping it up. They actually had the hoverboard like on screen or whatever, mm-hmm. but they never actually showed anybody like using it really, or like it would be kind of like camera tricks, so you wouldn't be seeing it like actually hover.
Yeah.
So you'd be like, well, okay, that's cool. We actually want to see it work.
this article on CNET's literally called "The Lexus Hoverboard Is Real." So basically that's what you're saying, that people weren't sure like how real it actually was.
Yeah, so recently they actually released a pretty cool video of a person shredding with it. You can see basically the cool liquid nitrogen just pouring out of it. Basically how it works, it's what do you call it when the magnets are like really in that state where they're really strong, where they're cooled, like they're super conductive or something like that?
I don't know what you call that.
Well, anyways, they cool the magnets to a point where, that the point where they're really strong. So it has such a high high strength that it can basically float. But the problem is it really only works on metal. Like, you watch the video and you see the guy, he's going to a skate park, hovering, whatever. But the hoverboard, it obviously doesn't repel gravity itself. It just works off the metal. So it's a cool technology, but it's not really, something feasible to utilize. You can't just pick up a hoverboard and go wherever you want. And the reason why I was talking about the hoverboard is, it was something interesting, cool that I thought of. And I was like, oh, it'd be kind of interesting, and it's applicable to film because you can use it while you're filming.
Yeah. And like, you see people like drive trucks around and kind of sit in the bed of a truck and try to get like a dolly shot that way. Mm-hmm. I kind of like it this more for kind of those one wheel things that you see. Like I said, Tom Antos did a video of it where basically you just kind of lean back and then you go with the camera. And if you combine that with like one of those gyro stabilizers, then you're really good, doing good, because you can move and still control the camera and still watch, you know. And it's not super dangerous, though. It is pretty dangerous.
Yeah, and I wanted to use the hoverboard as a segue.
Ooh, fancy.
Into these little things I've been seeing recently on... when I say social media, I specifically mean Snapchat. I'm following some people in Snapchat. And within the last few months, I've been seeing a bunch of snaps with these people using these weird things on their feed. Like, they're Segways, but they don't have the handle on them, you know? I think you've seen them before. Basically,
is it just connected, or is it 1 foot like rollerblades?
No, they're connected. Okay. So basically, you're standing...
So the one J.R. Smith used during the finals. Oh, my gosh. He got so much flack for using it. Like, when he arrived to the game, he literally arrived to the game with his hoverboard. Go ahead.
Yeah, so it's this little platform you stand on. It's got two, like, things, basically, that kind of you can lean on, and then it dictates how it rotates and goes. Mm-hmm. And so it's like just a little thing. It doesn't need your hands. Yeah, exactly. Just like that. Just like that.
Yes.
So, yeah, these things, I guess, apparently, they're really trying to push it on people. So it seems like a lot of high-profile people are, like, using them. I don't know if they're giving them out for free or something. Mm-hmm. But they're really interesting because you don't need your hands to use them. You just move kind of like a Segway. And so I already was reading an article about this one filmmaker who was utilizing it. They basically saying, like, in places where you can use it, it's like having an infinite dolly. Like, you just sit there, you just go.
Yeah. So, no. And like this, like, the one I've seen in particular is the one with the big old rubber wheels so that it's not causing as many bumps either. So you combine that with, you know, a gyro, like a stabilizer, and you're really getting smooth footage, like going down the sidewalk or whatever.
Yeah, so from what I understand, there's a lot of companies producing these right now. Like, I think eBay and stuff is flooded with a lot of ones that some Chinese company makes them.
They're expensive, like $1,500 for these ones.
Oh, yeah. Those are $1,500 ones, right? But the China ones I'm talking about are maybe like $200 or $300.
Yeah.
And they work pretty well, according to this article I was reading. The guy, he was able to use it maybe over, like, 3 days, and he still didn't run out of charge on it. So it's not like you go, like, maybe a mile or something, you run out of juice. Like, it'll last for a little while. Mm-hmm. And apparently they're easy to use. And according to that, if you want to buy that, you know, that unbranded named product thing, you only spend, like, $300 on it, right? So it can fit a lot of people's budget. And I think it's a useful tool for filmmaking, like, especially as a technology, you know, progresses and maybe it gets cheaper or even better. I think it's definitely like a really good option for people who want to, you know, get a nice smooth shot just moving in or moving out.
Yeah. No, I definitely could see that. Yeah, I mean, like, he must have been at the beginning, like 6 months ago, he was showing a video of this. So he was kind of ahead. He's always ahead of the times when it comes to that, the futuristic stuff. And that kind of inspired me to look into getting a skateboard. And so I can technically do it with my skateboard, but my skateboard isn't, you gotta have another hand to do it. So that's kind of the problem, which, I mean, can't be hard. You could just have it up here by your thumb. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely something cool.
Yeah, and if you want,
especially if they don't make noise. That's like the other big thing.
Yeah.
Like, there's gonna be the ones that make the electric noise, like my skateboard does, that would basically make the sound unusable for that shot, which most of the time you sacrifice the sound for those type of shots because you can't, like, run around with a mic with you or whatever. So it just depends, but, you know. All right. Are we ready to fight? Looks like we got about 30 minutes left.
Okay.
Let's fight. Let's do it. Might be cutting this episode short today. So film versus digital. So let me just give a little bit of background. I graduated from college in about 2011. Right when we started the show, and all my professors for the last 2 years of college, all of them were just total fanboys of film. Like, oh my gosh, you have to shoot on film. It's true artistic. It's gritty. Mm-hmm. It's all these things. And it's like, but digital's so much cheaper and so much clearer and sharper and better and, like, so much more accessible and so much better for the environment and all these things. Why would I use film? Why are you telling me to use film? We have to preserve film. Now, I agree. We do have to preserve film. Film that was shot in the 1920s. We don't need to keep using film. We don't need to Christopher Nolan it and just try to shoot film for everything and IMAX and all these things. Digital's here. I mean, Peter Jackson proved it with The Hobbit, which was a terrible movie, but, you know, it looked really, really good, even though he decided to shoot at 40 frames per second for some reason, which is probably what ruined it for most people. But yeah, do you have any first points for me? That is my background of why I'm so passionately against film, and why it's just been shoved down my throat for so many years that it's just gotten tired of it. I think we're finally starting to move away from it these last 4 years since I graduated.
Okay. So let me ask you a question. How much do you enjoy those dumb social pictures you see maybe on Facebook or something with all those weird filters and stuff on it, just like spamming everything, like everywhere, like everyone and their mother is just so let's check out this artsy picture I took. Oh, I'm a photographer now. Side job is photography. Oh, look at this.
I've had this argument with people who are pro film before. So I was expecting this. I had it written down. I had that the only negative of digital, which is can also be considered a positive. Also considered a positive because you can get so many pictures in and there's no limit to how long you can record for and there's all these things. There's a lot of positives too because you can take a million digital cameras or digital pictures and 999 of them, or sorry, you can take 1,000 pictures and 999 of them will be shitty, but that one will actually be really good and maybe it happened by accident. Does that still make you an artist? Sure, why not? But yeah, you're right that people just take so many pictures today and then they just plop a filter on them. You got Instagram and a lot of that is just the accessibility of like the cameras because it is digital and you couldn't have a film smartphone, like this couldn't happen. Mm-hmm. So how many, I see so many pictures on Reddit every day on like the GoPro sites every day of these amazing pictures that people are taking because they just happened to be hiking at a certain time when the light was perfect and they took a shot like on their iPhone. Didn't you see that whole campaign? This was all shot on the iPhone. They did all those commercials in a row where basically it was like this really professionally looking thing. It's like this was shot on the iPhone 6.
No, that happened.
And that's only possible because of digital. The fact that you can always have your camera with you. You don't have to have a film camera with you with different, you know, types of film and sensitivities and all this stuff. You can just have it. And yeah, there's a lot of crap, but there's also there's a lot more good things as well because it's so accessible and people are able to use it. And anybody can be an artist. Anybody can post something on Reddit that actually looks good.
So I'll maybe give you the point that maybe out of about like a million like dumb, pointless digital pictures, there's like one with actual merit. But
a million is a strong number, but go ahead. That's a little bit of a hyperbole. I'd say every 100 out of every 100 pictures I take with my digital camera, at least one of them is good.
Oh, you take, Aaron. You who went to film school. I think it's maybe a little bit more than one out of 100, okay?
Okay, that's fine, but not one out of a million, okay?
I'm talking about the general human population.
Okay, sure.
I know
you suck, but you don't speak for the whole world.
So yes, definitely. Definitely this digitizing and having it on phones and stuff has definitely made it more accessible. It is more accessible. Dude. It is more accessible.
Yes, okay.
But it's devaluing the art. Like think about before, back in the olden days when you had to go process your film and stuff, who would actually
be taking pictures? That's only because people are stupid and they post so many pictures. That's just because people are so, like, you got all these selfies and everything. And it's like people are just so pretentious, or I don't know what the word is, but like self-absorbed. But the same thing would happen if film was that, like, you could just take as many pictures with film. It'd be the same thing.
But you can't. That's the point of film. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, it's not exactly the point, but that's one of the
sacrifice.
Yeah, exactly. Like
you have to pick and choose what you want to take a picture of. Yes,
it's a labor. It's not just taking the picture. It's
What about people who buy those Polaroid cameras for $80 and they can just go around?
Those are an abomination.
Boom, 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 boom. Those are film. Those are film. Those are film.
Those are an abomination.
And those come up with even worse pictures because they just take crappy quality and then, but it's film and it's cool because it's instant and all that stuff.
No, okay. Technically, that's film, but that's BS. when you say a film camera, I'm not talking about a disposable film camera. I'm talking about an actual camera that utilizes film, okay?
Okay, okay. And, no, we're talking about film as film versus digital. That's the argument.
Okay,
film
so there's one little small subset, like this nasty, like, I don't know, displaced child of film with a disposable camera.
I don't even need to use that argument. You can have that one. Okay. I have more. So
no, wait, just, I'm not done with my point, Aaron. Go ahead. So because it's so labor intensive and, you know, not really accessible, only the people who really want to shoot film are actually taking the pictures. Like, they know, like, it becomes, there's more value to it. As opposed to just like sitting there, look, I just took, okay, this is what it comes down to. So there's more, there's inherently more value to a picture.
No one has ever done that. No one has ever done.
There's inherently more value to people and pictures who utilize film as their medium. I won't deny that, yeah, it's nice that digital is more accessible, but inherently, like, film, like, taking the time to actually utilize a film camera and do all that means you have a certain level of
commitment. I agree. I give you the point that the percentage of pictures that people take on film are going to be more labored and intensive and more.
You are twisting a knife in my side. This guy.
And generally, they probably will be better. Maybe not image quality-wise, but just more artistically better. Sure. But that's just because people could take so many pictures, and it's a little bit skewed. Like, I take, you know, the other day I was taking 3 pictures a second for like 20 straight seconds on my camera just to make sure I got the right smile in a particular situation. But that means 19 of those images probably sucked, but there was one in there that was good. Does that mean that I wasted 19 pictures? No, it's because it was digital. I could just delete it and whatever, no big deal.
But if you were utilizing a film camera, you wouldn't necessarily get the perfect pose. And part of life is the imperfection, Aaron.
Yeah.
You might not see that perfect smile. And that's part of what makes art, the imperfection.
And what about the bride who is paying you $3,000 to shoot her wedding and you didn't get her perfect smile while she was cutting her cake?
Well, that's not really art. That's just BS. Wedding photography.
Oh, okay. Okay, sure.
Art isn't done for money or anything like that. So art is done for art.
I'm going to start right off with my mic drop moment.
Oh.
And we've talked about this. In order to get the film look, we were just talking about it in the last segment. In order to get the film look, just the image quality look. Now, since digital, now this wasn't the case 5-10 years ago, but now that digital cameras like the A7 R2 and the A7S are so good that they blow film out of the water. And here's why. To get the film look on digital, you have to add shit. You have to add grain, you have to bleach it, and you have to desaturate it to get the film look. To get the look that film naturally gives you, you have to make your digital image look worse. And the only reason we do this is because people have grown up for the last 80 years with film. So in order to get reputation, whatever, you have to make your stuff look like film. And I'm waiting for the day, and this is what I was hoping The Hobbit would do, though it failed miserably because the movies were horrible. What I'm hoping is that 50 years from now, we won't have to do that. Movies will be released in 60 frames per second. We won't have to worry about whether or not it looks like film because people will be used to it at that point. So just to match the film, you got to make it look bad. You got to add crap to it. And I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, but film is real. Film is, that makes it more artistic because you're actually filming on there and you get the one chance to do it and you blah, blah, blah. And it's more gritty and it's an actual material and all this stuff. But guess what? That doesn't make it better.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Well, let me add one more point to that. Sorry. I was leading up to my point and then I forgot it and then okay. So I just finished weirdly. Okay. But my point is, you didn't make, unless you made the film with your hand, it doesn't make it more artistic for you to shoot on film that you bought versus shooting digital. You know, ones and zeros, that doesn't make it more artistic. Now, if you made that film strip with your hands and then you took pictures with that or you made a movie with that, then sure, that's more artistic because you made that with your hands and you put every blood, sweat, and tears into that and that makes it more intimate, whatever. But guess what? People don't do that. So I don't want to hear that just because you're using film makes it more artistic because it's real and it's grittier and all that. You didn't make the film, so don't tell me that.
But it's still more difficult and harder, right? There's more effort involved.
We already established in this for our first argument. We're not going back to that.
Yeah, so, I mean, that adds value in itself that you actually have to go get it processed unless you have, like, a film scanner.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Go ahead. What's your...
Oh, so I was going to ask, why are you wearing a t-shirt right now? and why is your hair cut like that?
I don't have an answer for that.
You don't have
an answer? No thought went into that at all.
I mean, like, why don't you dress like a girl or something? Like, why wouldn't you do that?
Because that would be weird and not, like, something I'd want to do.
Why would it be weird, though?
You're trying to get me to support your argument. I'm not going to.
No, you just said it would be weird because as a culture, we're used to seeing...
things like film being good, which it's not, right? Oh, this is my argument. This is my next argument.
No. We are used to seeing like males dress like that with the short hair, shorter hair, you know, maybe t-shirt or something like that, not really necessarily dress. And you had stated earlier that, you know, some people do things to digital to make it look like film.
Mm-hmm.
And...
but times are changing. That's what I was saying. Yeah, 50 years from now, 50 years from now, that won't be the case.
50 years from now, yeah, okay. But we're living right now, Aaron. And right now, it's film. That's right, dude. That is right. You cannot deny that, okay? The film look is a thing. Why would you even bother
making... people don't like change. Okay. People don't like change. People exactly. Like what they're used to.
Yeah, people do not like change. So that's why film is in, dude. You gotta use film.
Nobody uses film. There's like I can only name like 5 directors who are still sharing film. Like Christopher Nolan, whoever, Christian Bigelow, and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
Oh my gosh.
Nah, dude, but if they use film, imagine how much better the movie was.
Everybody's about being progressive and be better for the environment. Film is not good for the environment. Film is horrible. Film is made out of oil. It's flammable. Did you see Inglourious Basterds where the whole plot revolved around her burning all the movies in the back and lighting the whole place on fire? I know you saw that. Yeah. It's flammable. It's bad for the environment. It's not progressive, obviously, because it's not cost efficient at all. It's very expensive. And obviously, we already talked about how it has oil and other fossil fuels in it and stuff, fossil fuel materials or whatever. And there's a recording limit. You can't just keep recording and like get all those moments from the birthday party or whatever. Let's focus more on film. You can't do films that, you know, have been coming out lately where they shoot for basically 2 straight hours. And like, you know, for instance, actually, I don't know about that, but, and just the workflow for digital is so much faster. The fact that we can get more done now and throw more darts on the wall and see what sticks. Yeah, there's going to be more shit, but that's just how progress works.
I feel sorry for you.
More equals more shit and more better shit as well.
But that does that necessarily make it better? Yes. I argue no, Aaron. No. You were just saying that you can't continuously record for 2 hours. That is true. And that's what it pushes. It pushes people. It pushes people working on the film. It pushes people on the set. It pushes the actors to get the cut.
That's fine, but
like
that's taking a tool out of your toolbox. All of a sudden, you can't film like a 20-minute scene because you're running out of film.
Yeah, that's it. Pushes people. No, Aaron.
It sounds like a record player.
No, Aaron. Yeah, because I'm trying to get across my point. It does. Okay, I that's not deniable. It is harder to work with because you have a set amount of time, but that having such a limit, like imposing that sort of things on certain people, like certain people are driven by those things. And, you know, you might see like maybe like it was the last cut or something. Like, okay, this is the last cut. And all of a sudden it's the best take ever. You might not get that with digital because you can just be like, oh, whatever, we'll just do another one. Just do another one, you know, just keep going, whatever. It gets devalued, like I was saying, but you just do a bunch until, like you're saying, you just throw a bunch of darts and one hits, like, oh, okay, we're done, but look at how much time we lost. But what if they had an imposed limit by the film? Maybe they would have pushed that last 10% to get the perfect shot.
Maybe, but maybe we wouldn't have actually gotten the good shot. Maybe they would have ran out of film. Maybe, you know, whatever, but maybe. All I'm saying is that digital gives everybody the best chance of creating the best work of art. And we're not even going to talk about how film in general is just more artistic, because it's not. And that's a lie. And that's stupid. But my other thing is, film is bulky. We talk about all these cameras getting smaller and smaller. Film is bulky. You can't get into the places you want to get to in film. And Citizen Kane, which basically...
This is the digital stuff.
We are having digital camera issues. But this show wouldn't be possible with film. We'll just end the argument there. I mean, I've said all my points. You've said all your points. things like YouTube videos and video podcasts and other forms of media, TV shows, wouldn't be possible if we were forced to continue to shoot on film. Things like sitcoms and like The Office, where it was kind of in and out, moving around. You couldn't do that on film cameras like you can. Actually, I don't even know if The Office was shot on film, because technically you have tapes and stuff. But that's not true film. That's just like a cassette tape or whatever. But you have digital now, and it's just so much more accessible for everybody. And yeah, you get a lot of shit, but you get a lot of good stuff too. And being progressive and moving to the future, it's all about getting the best possible movies that we can get. At least that's what I think.
I don't know, Aaron, because for me, movies are really about like the actual content, like the actors and stuff. And since there's a small chance that filming on film might push like a small percent of people to act better, film wins. That's it. That is it. It is done.
We're going to have to wait in the comments to see who actually won this, because I'm not sure. But I would say that my argument to that is that getting, you know, 30 takes of a certain scene where, you know, actors who are really good like Anne Hathaway and Hugh Jackman, whoever else, can just try so many different ways. And maybe one way was really good. Maybe that sixth take that they shot on film was really good. But then the 30th take they shot on digital, she tried it just a little bit differently. And she just did it a little bit differently. And all of a sudden that just opened the door for a completely different interpretation. That's what they end up using the cut. Because guess what? The editor is actually the one who shapes the movie. That's the person who decides which take to use. And the fact that they can use digital and have so much more options of actors trying and being out there and trying so many different things, that's what's going to make original content moving forward better and spicier.
Yeah, you know what I say to that 50,000 take digital stuff? Soulless. No value. Disgusting. I look at it. I see a perfect movie shot on digital. Yeah, let me see you do it on film. Boom. Done. It has no worth. I see a movie on film, I'm like, wow, that was amazing. That took a lot of work and dedication. Mm-hmm. Unlike digital.
Oh, digital now takes no dedication. You're just completely devaluing the fact that there's other things involved other than just pressing record.
Yeah, you just sit there. You just sit there in a room.
We're literally talking about pressing record right now. We're not talking about lighting and mise-en-scene and acting and directing and all these other things. We're talking about pressing record. You're saying that digital pressing record devalues the entire process more so than pressing record.
Yeah, you know what a director does with a digital camera? He just sits there. He presses record and he goes, "You're stuck in this room for 20 hours until we get the perfect take. Go." He doesn't even have to do anything. He just do it again, do it again, do it again. And then finally he's like, "Yeah, I like that one." Boom. You know, with film, he actually has to work. He has to be like, no, he directs. He's pushed forward. Digital, soulless, nothing. Might as well have a robot.
I think you're overanalyzing this. I think the same thing happens in film. On these production sets where they have $200 million budgets, don't you think they use as much film as necessary to get the exact take they want, just as they do with digital? The only way your argument has any leverage is when we're talking about more guerrilla style independent filmmaking, where you only have a certain amount of cassette tapes or film or whatever, versus, you know, digital having gigabytes and terabytes worth of space to just shoot as much as you want. I mean, we're even at a limit here. We're shooting on a 250 gigabyte hard drive. We can only shoot for an hour and a half, so we always have to keep under that. So we're at a rush here, and we make our content good based on that. So don't tell me that digital is all and everything. And most, like, remember the 5D? Remember when we were recording? It only recorded for 12 minutes. Do you remember that? So don't tell me the digital is...
Yeah, so digital sucks, dude.
Well, now it's better. Like, the GH4 can record as long as you want. And same with this, as long as you have a good hard drive and it doesn't overheat. Oh, man. Okay, well, I think we're going to end it here. Let us know in the comments what you want to hear in next week's segment 3. Thanks for the question from before. Let us know who you thought won. I'm gonna have links in the description for kind of all, I should have mentioned this at the beginning, but basically all the different segments. So if you don't like a segment, you skip ahead to the next one. I got some requests to do that, so I'm gonna be doing that from now on. Please rate, comment, subscribe on iTunes. We need some more followers on iTunes. We're still stuck around like 30. We're not really getting too many. I haven't advertised it at all other than showing it on YouTube videos, and YouTube's not getting that much traffic from it. So I gotta find a way to kind of popularize it a little bit more. I think we're finally starting to lock in. I think we just need like graphics and maybe a new name and an intro, and then it'll be spiced up. We need some sex appeal, just like right on the thumbnail. Boom.
I'll just do that.
Oh, dude, I have V-neck tees of all the same colors, so I'll just wear V-neck instead. Okay. There we go. All right, anything you want to say?
Yeah, film one. Yep.
Digital for life. Moving forward, the next 50 years, there's no question. See you guys.
Bye. What?